Basic Brewing Radio is sponsored in part by the American Homebrewers Association. The American Homebrewers Association invites you to choose your own brew venture. Join for 1 year and select a complimentary brewing book from Brewers Publications. Choose from more than 60 titles to match your brewing goals. Visit homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing to join the American Homebrewers Association and treat yourself to a new brewing book. Get offer details at homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing. homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, March 23rd, 2023. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Matt Giovannisi of Brew Cabin and I formulate a recipe for a dark mild. This time, it's Matt's turn to brew. We also taste the Italian Pilsner that I brewed and he and I formulated. We also, at the end of the show, taste the Vienna Lager that I brewed and Chris Colby and I formulated. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And many thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Coming up next week, I'm planning to run the episode that I recorded in Hot Springs, Arkansas last week, my hometown. Kelly Dotson and I paid a visit to Origami Saki, which is under construction in the Hot Water City. We tasted some test batches and were very impressed. It was a great conversation with Ben Bell and Justin Potts of Origami Saki. Looking forward to sharing that with you again next week. We were able to figure out why my Hellesbach wasn't very Helles. The beer that Chris Colby and I designed was supposed to be golden, but what I brewed looks more like a brown ale. Well, I was like, what the hell is going on? Well, with Daniel's help from Boston Mountain Brewing and Supply, we figured out that there was apparently a miscommunication somewhere along the line. I wanted 9 pounds of Pilsner and 4 pounds of Vienna malt for my beer, but I wound up getting 4 pounds of 20 Lovibond caramel Vienna instead of the base Vienna. I know. I was afraid the beer was going to be a big syrupy mess, but you know, it's not that bad. In fact, it's pretty good. It's going to be a fun comparison between that beer and the one that I'm going to rebrew this week with the original recipe. You know, it happens. It was an honest mix-up, and we'll end up with an accidental experiment that's going to be fun to do, fun to taste. I'm brewing both of those beers with the current seasonal yeast L09 K Bueno from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. The original gravity is 1070, and it's a lager fermented cold, so I dusted off the stir plate and actually made a 2-liter starter for each of those beers. Within about an hour and a half, the starter was very actively fermenting. Thank goodness I added a few drops of surfactant, you know, some firm cap S in there, or it would have been all over the place. But the starters, I've done this, both starters, both of them were done by the next morning, and they already started to settle out once I turned off the stir plate. So that yeast was like, okay, what's next? What else you got to throw at me? I haven't brewed the second beer yet. But I've pitched the dregs of the starter into that first beer at about 10 a.m., fermented, you know, in the upper 50s Fahrenheit. And by 4 p.m., yeast was swirling around actively and the airlock was bubbling. I did add some oxygen, about a minute's worth of oxygen at pitching time as well. So that's at lager fermentation temperature, you know. So online yeast pitching rate calculators were telling me that, you know, I should have stepped up that starter 2 more times. But that's crazy. Looking at the results, you know, I'm wondering if I needed a starter at all. The first beer is in the keg and tastes very clean as far as the fermentation is concerned, which is what we're after. You know we love Imperial Organic Yeast. With 200 billion cells in each easy-to-open package, my stir plate is usually dusty. Now it's dust-free. Because I don't use it anymore to make starters for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches. And my airlocks are usually bubbling before bedtime. Ask your local homebrew store about Imperial Organic Yeast, and of course find them at imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com. And we thank Imperial for their support, as always. All righty, let's get with Matt Giovannisi of brewcabin.com and the Brew Cabin YouTube channel to plan a dark mild. Matt Giovannisi, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks again for having me.
Very excited. You're getting to taste another one of my beers.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Italian Pilsner that we formulated a few weeks back. And I sent some to you, and I sent some to Chris as well.
Mm-hmm.
I sent you also the Vienna Lager that Chris and I formulated, too. So Chris tasted it earlier this week, the Italian Pilsner, and he liked it. No pressure for you to say that you think the same. But you've got one open in front of you, and I've got one in front of me. So what do you think? Does it meet the conception of what you were thinking? Be honest.
Well, I will be honest. And first of all, it is, for me, 10 a.m. So little Italian breakfast. All right. So aroma-wise, just before I even go in for any, you know, taste, it smells awesome.
Oh.
It's got a lot of hop aroma, very, very Pilsner-like. Let me look at our notes. Holitauer, yeah. Now, when you used the malt, you just used Pilsner.
Right.
Do you know what kind you used or brand?
It was the Avant-Garde Pilsner.
I mean, we put 6 ounces of hops in this thing,
yeah.
Even though it's a, you know, only 4.5% IBU, alpha acid. It's bitter, but not like, you know, I mean, Pilsner bitter.
The hops were added 30 minutes into the boil or 30 minutes before the end of the boil. And then after fermentation, a 3-day dry hop. So 3 ounces what is that, 85 grams in the boil,
yeah.
And 3 ounces or 85 grams dry hop.
I really like it.
Oh, good.
It's got that it's got the hop punch that I really wanted in this. I will be honest and say that for me, at least, Holitauer kind of has a very floral note to me,
mm-hmm.
almost like soap. But I know it's not soap. I think I just associate that like floralness with bathroom soap because I don't go out into fields with a bunch of flowers often and sniff them.
Lavender-esque almost?
I would say yes, lavender-esque.
Hmm. So a little bit of grandma's bathroom for you.
A little bit, yes. But would be perfect, like an Italian grandmother's bathroom. I'm in.
Steve also used the word floral when we tasted it. Mm-hmm. We tasted it for the video side of things, and I characterized it as Pilsner Plus.
Pilsner? Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's a Pilsner. But it's just got a little bit of extra, maybe a little bit of extra bitterness,
yeah.
And definitely a more hop flavor. I don't get
it.
My nose doesn't work so well anymore, so you know, I'll have to lean on you and Steve.
I don't think mine ever did, honestly. it's something I'm trying to work on, you know.
Yeah,
I should go out into more fields and sniff flowers.
There you go.
For research purposes.
I just don't, you know, it's got to be a strong smell for me to actually smell it nowadays. So, but I'm happy with the beer. Do you think it fits the quote unquote Italian Pilsner style?
I think so. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I honestly would probably even go a little bit more bitter.
Oh,
you
really?
Or you could, or maybe, and maybe do, you know, whether it's adding more hops or just adding a more higher alpha acid hop, you know, for maybe just the aroma side of things, you know, and you could go maybe a little bit more on the American side if you wanted to in the aroma or the dry hop even.
Mm.
But I don't know. Yeah, I would say that it doesn't have like the classic Pilsner, you know, American Pilsner that you would think of. I guess, like, isn't Budweiser an American Pilsner technically?
Yes.
So I wouldn't – it's definitely way more bitter than that. It's definitely way more flavorful as far as the grain is concerned. It's definitely got more of like a – again, for lack of a better descriptor, just a grainier
mm-hmm. –
you know, I wouldn't, I'm not going to go, I'm, I don't want to say malty because it's not malty. You know what I mean? It's just like a.
It's not super sweet.
It's not super sweet. It's not malty. It's like eating a wheat field or eating a barley field. Assuming, again, I don't go into barley fields and sniff them or eat them, but it's like it has that fresh grain, maybe bread character
mm-hmm.
that you don't really get in those American, you know, macro lagers.
And I think the Hygge, the L25 Hygge from Imperial did a really good job of brewing this cleanly. I don't get any, you know, yeasty off character at all.
No.
I don't even get any corn
no.
with this. You know, like, with Pilsners and some lagers, you know, a little bit of DMS or a little bit of corny is
yeah.
acceptable for the style and sometimes desirable. I like, say, my cream ale to taste a little corny.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's super clean with this. And I fermented it, you know, it was a 1050 beer. I fermented it at 57 degrees Fahrenheit or around, 14 something C, with no starter, and pitched it cold and fermented it cold. And it was on the third day. It arose from the kegerator and went into the diacetyl rest. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, a couple of days later, it was – well, a couple of days later is when I dry hopped it. And then, you know, a couple of days after that, I kegged it. So
So this is fairly quick.
Yeah. Well, it's been in the – it's been lagering for like 3 weeks.
Okay.
So, you know –
quick for a lager, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah,
traditionally,
but it didn't need any more.
It was
ready to go. All right. Well, I'm glad you like the beer.
And yeah, it's very good.
We'll have the opportunity if you're game at the end of the conversation to taste the Vienna Lager to see what you think about that.
Of course, I'm game.
But it's free beer. But it's mm-hmm. But it's your turn to brew, and so you
yeah.
want to brew something pretty different.
I do. So the story is very simple, but in the last couple weeks, I've been really – well, it hasn't been a couple weeks. I just had two really good examples of this style in the last 2 weeks. But I've been weirdly on this dark beer kick. And, you know, during the height of all the pastry stouts and, you know, barrel-aged stouts that were going on in my territory – I'm not a sweet person. I don't like things sickly sweet or like desserty sweet. And so I kind of avoided stouts for a long time. You know, just, you know, I like stouts, but like, you know, traditional Irish stouts, drier stouts, low ABV. But for some reason this winter, I've been craving dark beers. And so there was an opportunity. There's this brewery, which I mentioned earlier, Westbound and Down, and they make a beer. They made a beer called Inherited Wisdom, which was a British mild. And I had it and I loved it. And it turns out that this, you know, fairly trendy brewery, it's now a staple on their menu because it was so popular, which is kind of wild for a mild, right?
Hmm.
And now, so the other day I was there and I had it on Nitro. And it was really, really good.
I bet.
And then the other day, there's a brewery like right down the street from me called Primitive. And they had a beer on from a brewery in Denver called Hogshead. And all they do is traditional cask British beers.
Wow.
And they had a British Dark Mild on cask. And I had it through a beer engine. And I can't I know that this is not the flavor that I was like that is that beer, but it tasted like I was drinking a soft pretzel.
Wow.
And I couldn't figure out. I'm like, this is dark. It doesn't make any sense to my palate, but it was one of the best beers that I've had in the last probably 5 years.
Wow. Well,
and it went down way faster than any other beer. And I was just like, this tastes like a warm, soft pretzel.
Well, when you think about it, think of what a soft pretzel tastes like. You've got bread,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got toasted bread on the outside. Yep. You know, you've got that Maillard reaction, that toastiness going on.
Yeah.
So that makes perfect sense.
And there's probably a malt syrup in there, right?
Oh, I'm sure. There's probably a sweet glaze maybe for, you know, to help with the darkening of the outside of the pretzel maybe.
Yep. And you're toasting it at a high – I know like pretzels, they need a high oven because you want that outside to be brown but the inside to be still fresh and white.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this – I don't know where I got the salt from. That could have been – it could have been the fact that it was served at exactly at cellar temps, right? Because that primitive there, you know, and even Hogshead, they're just like – it's very traditional the way they serve it and they care a lot about the temperature. Maybe it was literally the water chemistry.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I don't know. It just blew me away.
Wow.
Blew me away. And I mentioned earlier I'm working on a video and I want to serve a beer on cask in my house at my house. So I'm like, originally I planned on doing a bitter, but I'm like, you know what? It's still the tail end of winter. Right, it's still winter for us here. We're still have snow on the ground, but we're coming into spring, and I kind of feel like this is a good style for the time of year. It's like a good transitional beer.
Sure,
you know, so that's kind of I wanted to give it a shot.
Well, we'll describe this beer. I mean, I have in front of me the BJCP description of it.
Yeah,
but I want to hear what you think about it. What do you think it looks like? What do you think it smells like? What do you think it tastes like?
I think it definitely – so the BJCP doesn't have a mild category. They just have a dark mild,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if that's a different style. The what I've seen in my research and what I've tasted from some breweries is there's a lot of like dark stone fruit or dark dried fruit character. You know, fig and maybe raisin,
mm-hmm.
but and date, you know, but I did not get that in the sample that I liked or the example that I liked. So for me, for that, and I'm going to use that one because I do have the other one in my head, which did have a more, I guess you would say, date flavor, right? And it actually had the look of a date, you know, how it's like kind of like brownish, but right. like not too dark brown. And I'm thinking like color wise, if you can picture, and this is probably I'm quoting a different beer, but Newcastle, like that color to me. And that was one of my favorite beers growing up was Newcastle. And I know we're not making a brown ale, but that color is like that copper color,
mm-hmm.
but not overly Irish ready, you know, not like, you know, so with this one that I had in off the cask was dark. It like looked like a porter stout vibe, and it did not have to me that those raisin dark fruit characters, those dried fruit characters. I'm sure it was there, but I didn't really get it. So the way that I'm kind of thinking about it is, how would I recreate? And I think all the things you said about a soft pretzel, how would I recreate that in a beer without going too far on the roast end, because I don't want it to be coffee-ish. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to be chocolatey. I want it to be toasty.
Right.
Right? Not roasty.
Right.
Okay. So my thought is I think you definitely have to go with a strong base. And I don't know if you can go more Brit than Maris Otter.
No, it seems to be a cliche so far in the recipe development series.
It does. And I just got a fresh batch of crisp, so that should be good to go. I think just for style purposes, I don't want to go, and we could start writing this down too, unless you just want me to
let's start adding it. Yeah, let's open the software. Might as well while we're going along.
All right, so I'm gonna add in just 10 pounds because I don't know where we're gonna sit yet, but I think we just got to do that now. Yeah, 10 pounds is way too high, but anyway, I think for the sort of middle of the road to get that if there is any fruit, dark fruit character, I want to put a crystal malt in there, but I don't want to go as high. I've seen recipes where they've gone up to 90 and 120. And I know that 120 can be a little, again, date raisiny.
Right.
I don't want to go that high.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with a 60. It was what I was thinking, 60.
Well, my old standby recipe back in the day for a pale ale, like my Amarillo ale, was 10 pounds of American Two Row and 1 pound of 60 Lovibond Crystal.
Oh.
And that just gave me kind of a orangey coppery color.
Yeah.
So
which I think is to start. Are you saying that's a good thing, or what are you saying?
I would go higher.
You mean in Lovibond on the crystal malts?
Yeah. I would
like
go 90? At least a 90, I think. Because if a pound of 60 Lovibond in a 5%, 5 gallon beer, if it only gave it kind of an orangey, orangey coppery color, unless you want to, I don't know how dark you want to go, though.
I want to go dark. So okay. I'm thinking that could just be, you have the Maris Otter as your base. You have 60 to 90 as your middle. And then on top of that, I had a couple of ideas. One idea was to just do a little bit of chocolate or maybe roasted barley or a little bit of chocolate, I was thinking.
Yeah.
And
or maybe some brown malt.
Or maybe some brown malt.
That would give you more kind of the, you're talking bready, you're toasty,
yeah.
And I don't want to, I just want to toss this out there, but maybe you want to think about like maybe Victory?
Special B?
Like a biscuit malt?
Yeah.
For that toast, more of that kind of toasty character. Maybe subbing a little bit of that for some of the Maris Otter,
Yep. I'm with you. I think, do you think, because we can always get color with, a dehusked sort of dark malt, like I have some Midnight Wheat. I have some
Black Prinz.
Yeah, I have some, what's the other one? Like Carafa 3, right? Like a debittered, dehusked black malt. Just if we wanted to throw a couple ounces in to get that, if we needed to get it a little bit darker. But I think, and the other thought I had too, was just to reduce the acridness of what could possibly come out in the mash. I was thinking about whatever dark malts I add, I would add at the end of the mash not do a full mash with them and just kind of like just to get that color and then
right.
Pull it.
Right.
So that was another thought I had too. So what I'm going to do, let's add. So what did you say 90 gave you? Like,
well,
flavor-wise.
I think Steve would usually use 90 Lovibond Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it gives you just more, obviously a deeper color.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more malt sweetness. Not a whole lot. Depending on how much you add.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the difference? And this is where I'm a little bit out of my wheelhouse. There's a difference between a British crystal than it is American crystal. Is that, have you ever heard that before?
Oh, I'm sure every manufacturer has.
I'm trying to think of what my local homebrew shop's going to have. He's probably going to have, I'm just going to put in Brees 90 Lovibond.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to put in we're going to have to adjust poundage here. I'm just going to put in 1 pound, just get us going. And yes, that gives me an orange color, an SRM of about 11. Now, as far as like the toasty dark malt, I don't know. I've seen a lot of recipes with chocolate. I worry about the coffeeness.
I like brown malt.
Brown malt.
For this kind of a thing, I think.
And would you say brown malt, would you say that would impart that like biscuity character or that like toasty character?
Yeah, I think it would be leaning more toward toasty than coffee or chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's, you know, it's kind of an in-between, you know, where it's not been roasted enough to where, it gets those really dark characters.
Well, what's interesting is like the 90 Levibon, obviously, crystal malt, brown malt is only 51 Levibon.
Really?
Yeah. That's at least the crisp version of it, yes.
Huh.
So I'm wondering if there is no, if we don't put a crystal malt in there and we just do the brown malt, and that gives us the toasty middle.
Well, of course, the crystal is going to give you a little bit more sweetness and body.
Which we need. I've also seen, one of my other ideas too was to add oats. Not a lot, but some flaked oats for that body. And I do have a feeling that beer that I had some flaked oats in it. At least it felt that way. I know it was served on cask, which is going to give it probably a little bit, the lower carbonation tends to give you a little bit more body, at least that I found. So I don't know, but I've seen, I looked up some award-winning recipes of Dark Mild, and a lot of them included oats, but like only 5% or less.
What would you think about adding some kind of sugar? Because if you read the books by Peter Simons, a lot of the, in fact, almost probably all of the brewers, the traditional British brewers added sugar, to their malt. And part of that was, because maybe sometimes they weren't so good at malting.
right.
But, I don't know. I'll just throw that out there just for you to think about. You may want to, it may counteract your, depending on what kind of sugar you are using, it might counteract your wanting to have, body in the beer. It might, dry it out a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true as well. And because it wouldn't be the sugar left over from like a crystal malt, which would give you that body. Right.
Right.
Now I'm kind of like thinking, what are toasty malts versus roasty malts?
Like Biscuit and Victory, I think, have been categorized as being toasty.
I like the idea of Victory. I think
it smells like napalm sometimes, but that's something else.
That's something else.
Especially in the morning.
Yes. A Victory malt is, that's a really interesting one. Because it's not going to give us any color. It'll give us some color, but it's really going to, I like the idea of it kind of sitting in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I have had Biscuit or like Victory malt. I think I want to do the 90 and the Victory together, and that sits in the middle.
Okay.
And sans the brown malt, but then add a little bit. I also, because I have just an absolute metric F ton of this stuff. I want to add some oats, but I definitely want to keep it low. I don't want to go too high with it. Probably just maybe a half pound or 8 ounces, Just because I have it and I've seen it used, and I'm like, all right. Now, I definitely need it to be darker because we're not even in the style guidelines if we were to just use a pound of Crystal 90 and a pound of Victory. And I brought the Maris Otter down to 8 pounds.
You might want to think about, and this may sound counterintuitive, but Black Patent.
Yeah, I've seen recipes online that have used that. Now, why would you say that over maybe even like a roasted barley?
Well, I mean, maybe not over the roasted barley, but the Black Patent in our tasting, I mean, it's been criticized in the past as being acrid.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's in the tastings that we've had, Black Patent actually adds a little bit of sweetness.
I think it's just called Black Malt now.
Oh.
I think I got rid of the patent word. I think. I think I just heard that. I don't know why.
Well, that's a it's a hangover from the fact that it was patented. I think the process that they used to make it was patented.
Oh, maybe. So. Yeah, maybe a statute of limitations of
Beck. Black royalty free.
Yes. It's been 72 years.
But I mean, you know, you might want to think about that. Say instead of like a bitter, debittered malt, which would, you know, tend to add just more color and not a whole lot of flavor. And Black Patent probably would be more traditional to the style.
Yes, I'm going to go with that. I like that idea. I'm only going to add in, I'm just throwing in numbers here to see where we land. Wow, that really didn't change much in the color. That's bizarre. Okay. Sorry. That was my stupid mistake. Oh. I put 0.5 in the ounces column and not in the
the
pound column. Okay, so yeah, that definitely got us dark.
Because I was very busy last week and couldn't make time to drive into town to go to the local homebrew shop, and because I was leaving town, I decided to order ingredients for my second attempt at a Helles Bock from our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave, from HighGravityBrew.com. I use the Build Your Own Beer page on HighGravityBrew.com. It's really simple. It's got the entire contents, ingredients-wise, of a well-stocked homebrew shop right there on one page. You scroll down, you know, you go through the base malts, you go through the specialty malts, you go through the hops, you go, you know, you pick everything. And as you pick your ingredients and add them to your cart, the running total is visible at the bottom of the page at all times. I chose to have the grain milled together, and it came to the house in one bag, ready for the mash tun. And I got timely updates from HighGravityBrew.com on the status of my order and when to expect it at my door. While you're on HighGravityBrew.com, of course, you can check out the Warthog systems and controllers and other electric setups that are designed to take the pain out of propane. And if you use the code EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your Warthog electric purchase. That's at family-owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com. What gravity are you shooting for? Because, you know, the mild is going to be a sessionable beer. And so 10 pounds of base malt is going to be way too much, I think.
So I dropped it to 8. I think I got to drop it a little bit lower because we're sitting at 5% right now.
Yeah.
And, you're not going to get anything from the black malt or – you might get a little bit from the victory.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So I'll drop this to 7. Let's see where that brings us. That brings us down to 4.5. And it actually, interestingly, and I'm okay with a little higher gravity on this, to be honest. I would like it to get down to 4 if possible, but it makes our percentages dead even.
Oh.
So it would be 70% Maris Otter, 10% Crystal 90, 10% Victory, 5% Black Malt, and 5% Flaked Oats.
Ooh, I like that.
You like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
And we haven't added in yeast yet. So I'm wondering, and we haven't added in a mash profile. So that should drop. It could drop the, you know, if our yeast is a low attenuating yeast and we mash a little bit higher to get more body and more sugars out of it, I could also drop the 4.5 maybe down to 4. So as far as hops, the only thing I've seen use, and I think just going traditional EKG or East Kent Goldings and Fuggle, but I just like EKG, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really go wrong. And from what I've read, you don't really want it to be bitter at all, you know, 20 IBUs max. And for my system, so, you know, obviously I'm at high altitude. I am my hop utilization is much lower than most places. So I'm probably going to have to go 1.5 ounces to maybe even 2 ounces. Nope, 1.5 ounce at 60 minutes. That's probably what I'm going to do.
And no other hops.
And no other hops. Yeah. And I might even switch it to a first wort. I might even do that. I kind of always do that. Because I'm like, why not? What the hell, you know?
If it makes it easier.
Makes it easier. Helps prevent boil over sometimes.
Yeah.
You know. It does jack up the IBU a bit, obviously, because you're adding it a little earlier. But I don't know. I don't know about that one. I might just do regular. I've never done regular. Always have to do something different. All right. So that brings us right in line to 20 IBUs at 1.5 ounces of East Kent. Although, again, if you're not at high altitude, probably 1 ounce would do you well. As far as yeast, I happen to have a packet of Imperial Pub.
Oh, well, there you go.
I kind of feel like that, you know, I don't need to overthink that one.
And no starter this time.
Oh, I'm definitely doing a starter.
What?
I am all.
What?
I know. I'm only doing a starter because I happen to have this packet of yeast for a while. So I can look at it. I don't know.
I wouldn't do a big starter there. Maybe just like 1 liter.
Well, I'll default this to you.
How old is the yeast?
Oof. Well, so. And I told you that I've been procrastinating on this video about making it ordinary bitter. So I've had it, I mean, definitely before the holidays. So we're already in March. I'm thinking it's...
Yeah, you might just make a... I'm sure it's fine.
Here's the other thing. We could stress it out a bit and get some fruity esters from the yeast. But I don't know if we want the fruit.
You don't want it to overpower the toast and biscuit and the...
Right. If I'm going for like a soft pretzel vibe.
Right.
And I want fruit on my pretzel. It's not Auntie Anne's.
Gust extra.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what people are doing nowadays with their soft pretzels.
Yeah, you might want to do like a 1 liter starter.
Yeah, I would go
as proof of life. You know, just to kind of like make sure it's still happy.
Exactly. And I'll say that just adding that yeast dropped it by 0.2% or 0.2 percentage points of ABV. So now we're down to 4.3.
Oh, interesting.
And I definitely want a medium body. I'm going to go with a 154 degree sack rest for 60 minutes. I want to see. That brings us down to 4.2. So. That makes sense.
Sounds good. And then you're gonna ferment it in a primary fermenter and then rack it into your firkin or your cask.
Yeah. So my thought was this, and we can talk a little bit about water chemistry too. Although I'm not 100% sure where I want to land on that, because again, if we're talking about that saltiness, I don't know. But So my plan was. I was going to bottle condition a few, maybe 6 bottles, like a 6-pack from the fermenter and add, you know, a little carbonation tab. And I'll send those to you so that they'll be conditioned, you know, bottle conditioned in some way.
Right.
And then, yeah, I was thinking about taking the rest of it since I have what's called a pin that's 4.5 gallons. So, you know. I don't think 6-pack is a half a gallon, but I could give you that would be enough for the pin, and I would serve it on cask relatively fast. So here's my thought was this too. I could technically do this tomorrow and ferment it very quickly, bottle it, you know, let it condition for a couple of weeks and send it over to you because this style is supposed to be fresh.
Right.
Mild apparently is the name of the freshness of the beer.
Hmm. Well, unless you have a rebreather on your cask.
Of course I do. But I'm not I bought all the friggin' gadgets, but I do have a breather. The plan was to, I have a glycol chiller in my system. I only use two. There, it has three. It can glycol three fermenters, but I have one that doesn't. I don't use. I only have two fermenters, and so I was thinking I could glycol chill the pin at exactly 50 degrees or 55 degrees and put a breather on it. And so I could have this on cask all the time and just roll it up, you know, put it on a cart and roll it up to my, my glycol chiller whenever I have it. But I think it would be more fun to try to kill the keg in a single night.
Yeah. You'd have to, boy, now's my opportunity to be judgy, but you know,
not by myself. I'd have to invite. Yeah, and that's my problem. Is I the reason I asked that question is because I just have all these beers on tap, and I like brewing, and I just can't drink them that fast.
Yeah.
So I need to have people over. Is the problem.
So yeah. That means that, you know, you would have to like coordinate shipment and you know, I could be ready to record, you know, the next show at the drop of the hat, you know, so that we can time the sampling of the beers or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting to try to get it as like the freshest possible, you know, version, especially while it's still cold out in the you know, shipping would be a little bit easier.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And we got to say that, you know, if you are a home brewer who bottle conditions your beer, you are making real ale.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, cask conditioned ale is real ale. You know, it's carbonated in the cask. And if you want to be strict about it, you know, once you pound the bung or whatever, once you tap that keg.
Sure.
You know, it's starting to go stale as soon as you pull that first pint.
Right.
Because CO2, you know, it's like a frat party all of a sudden. CO2 is entering the or not CO2, but air.
Oh, yeah.
Ambient air is entering into the keg and staling the beer.
Right.
You know, so that's why it's kind of that's part of the charm, really.
Part of the charm, yeah. And that's why it's like I have the breather, but I, you know, I'd rather just have a fresh day, like a fresh night, or I should say, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And the breather would be replacing the CO2. So you're always
right.
It's not going to go stale because there's CO2 at the proper pressure so that it's still pressurized.
Atmospheric pressure.
It's still pressurized by the fermentation, but it's just replacing that air at that or the gap. It's filling the gap, literally.
Exactly. Yeah. So, the only thing we didn't talk about is water chemistry. If you want to dive in on that. So with all the, it's according to my system, with all those dark malts and biscuit malts, the pH seems to be right on target. It's about 5.38. So don't need to add any sort of lactic or phosphoric acid to the mash, which is nice. Unless, you know, we change this. Now, I'm using reverse osmosis water here. The target profile is where I'm a little bit like, you know, where could we go with this? Actually, there is a mild ale profile in Brewfather. Probably the one you should go with.
sounds like it.
There's also like, there's also stouts and dark ales, like a Dublin style. And a dark lager, which, you know. I don't know. Probably the mild, huh? Makes most sense.
Would the Dublin side, would those accentuate the dark malts too much? Would they be a little bit too acrid? Or
you might be right. Yeah. So the mild profile, to be clear here, is higher in chloride than sulfate. It's 65 ppm of chloride, 40 of sulfate, and the sodium is at 20 ppm. So there is salt. Now, I want to just out of my own curiosity, I'm going to save this, but I'm curious on the salt. Let's see. What other, you know, so if I just look at, I know, so a balanced profile of salt would be about 16 ppm. So it's a little bit saltier than that. An American lager is at 8% salt, so not very salty. Mm. Yeah, like a New England IPA can be as high as 30% or 30 ppm or wow, even 20 ppm. So, yeah, it's sitting on the higher salt side of things, which I guess is good for what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep that, and I'm going to just hit auto here. Yeah. Yeah, everything looks pretty simple. Little chloride, little gypsum, little canning salt, kind of it.
Excellent.
If you want numbers, again, I'm on a reverse osmosis. I'm going to be using about 8 gallons of water, 3 grams of calcium chloride, 2 grams of gypsum. So that's sort of the ratio there.
Excellent.
And then 1 gram of salt.
Well, I'm looking.
And I just use kosher.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, this should be a fun one.
So, sure.
And yeah, I'm brewing on a new system too on this one. I'm going to do a similar system to what you have, just a brew in a bag system.
Well, excellent. So I've been distracted the past couple of minutes because my glass is empty.
And, oh.
Do you want to try the Vienna Lager?
I do.
Well, we'll pause here as far as the listeners are concerned, and I will be back when my glass is full.
Sounds good. This looks awesome. This one has you had mentioned your bottling process through the keg. Yeah, you could definitely tell this one was done correctly, I guess.
Yeah, I did a better job of keg filling the Vienna lager bottles than I did the Pilsner.
Yeah, this has got a lot more head. It hangs around. I think this is an older – you brewed this before the Pilsner, right?
Yeah. Well, not too much. I mean, I brewed the Vienna lager on January 23rd. Mm-hmm. I brewed the Italian Pilsner on the 27th.
Oh, so just not even a week.
Yeah. So, I mean, it hasn't been. Yeah. Well, this and the Vienna Lager's been in the keg a little bit longer because there was like 2 or 3 days of dry hopping for the Italian Pilsner.
Oh, right.
So there's a little bit of an advantage
because it's still dark,
but it's fairly
clear.
Clear. So this is a 5 gallon batch, 3.5 pounds or 1.6 kilograms of Vienna malt. It was going to be 7.5 pounds of Vienna malt, but the homebrew store was short on Vienna malt. So I substituted 4 pounds or 1.8 kilograms of crisp, finest Maris Otter. So this has got some Maris Otter in it as well. 2.5 pounds or 1.1 kilograms of 10 Le Bavon Munich, 2 ounces or 56 grams of Black Prinz. I mashed at 150 for 90 minutes. This was only 3 ounces or 85 grams of Czech Sots at 2.7% alpha acid for 60 minutes. I did a no chill. So after, while it was at the end of the boil, I just racked it into my little plastic jug and set it down in the basement where it chilled down to essentially my basement and the kegerator were at the same temperature. So it chilled down to lagering temperature.
Wow.
I pitched
cold down there.
I pitched a packet of L25.
Pitched a pack of pickle.
That's right. L25 Hygge, no starter. Started at 10:51, finished at 10:08 for an ABV of 5.6%.
5.6. Yeah. Wow.
So this is this is like four tenths of a percentage. Less alcohol than the Pilsner.
Mm-hmm.
But so what do you think of this beer?
The nose is very good. It's very it's got that. Now, remind me, you said it was Maris. There was a little bit of Vienna. Was there any crystal malts in this?
No. There was 3.5 pounds of Vienna, 4 pounds of Maris Otter. And again, it was supposed to be 7.5 pounds of Vienna, but I substituted. 2.5 pounds of 10 Le Bavon Munich and 2 ounces of Black Prinz. So no crystal.
And what were the hops you used?
Just Czech Sots at 60 minutes. And then no chill. So
I really want to try no chill. That sounds like an easy brew day.
It is. I love it. And the Hellesbach is going to be a no chill as well.
And what is that? Have you noticed anything with? Because obviously you don't do that with hoppy beers.
No, I don't do anything that's had hops added at the end of the boil or in the whirlpool or anything like that. It's just only beers that have had hops added at 60 minutes.
Do you notice that the beers that you no-chill tend to be hoppier than the ones you don't?
No. I mean, I haven't done a side-by-side. Maybe that would be a fun episode. But
yeah,
I haven't noticed. You know, like this beer is not super overly bitter.
No.
No, I think that, I mean, the biggest advantage is that I don't waste a lot of water.
Right. Yeah, right. And this is more time.
And I mean, you know, the next morning I've got to, you know.
You got more work in the next day.
Yeah, the next morning I got to sanitize the fermenter because I don't ferment. I guess I could just pitch yeast into the no-chill thingy. But it seems like that would be harder to clean up because there's croissant in there and there'd be residue. Some no-chill brewers will hold on to that chilled or naturally chilled unfermented wort for a long period of time.
Huh.
I'm a little scared of,
you
know, as we mentioned on the show, botulism.
Sure.
You know, things like that. So I just do it the next day.
Yeah. Get the yeast pitched before anything else can take hold.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So what do you think? What are your impressions?
Okay. So I'm drinking this from the color and I'm thinking amber ale, right? My vision is not connecting with the, if I have to close my eyes to drink this beer, I feel like, because it's so clean. And like, I don't get a lot of like what I expect to get from looking at the glass is like the, you know, the crystal malt, you know, sweetness or, you know, sort of a toastier or roastier character, but I get none of that. It looks amberish, but I don't get what my brain associates amber beer with, you know? And I guess that's the point of an amber lager, right? Of like, it's a lager. And I'm like trying to pull out notes of roastiness or even like fruit, or it's none of that. It's just so clean.
Yeah. Well, good.
And spicy too. I guess that's the hops.
Yeah, probably. It would have to be. But the Hugo did a really good job. And again, you know, this started out at 1051. I didn't do a starter. And it fermented at lager temperature. And it didn't, you know, it wasn't bubbling before bedtime, but it was definitely bubbling, you know, at breakfast. It was, you know, going the next day.
I could drink that all day. All day. Wow.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you liked
it. That's really good.
Well, Matt, this has been a lot of fun. And I'm super glad that you enjoyed both beers. I'm super glad. I'm assuming you're being honest. And I said,
you'll never know.
Well, Chris Colby liked them both, so I'm sure he's honest.
Oh yeah, he's honest.
No, I'm kidding, of course. But I'm super glad that you enjoyed them. I really can't wait to taste your beer coming up, and it will be fun to get back together. Thank you, sir.
No, thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks again to Matt. I believe that he's already brewed this beer. He says he's going to produce a video about it on his Brew Cabin YouTube channel, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that and for sampling that one myself. It's going to be my turn next time. What should I brew? Let me know. I think it's going to be my turn both with Matt and Chris. So, let me know if there's a springtime beer that you'd like to hear us talk about. And brew. If you have brewing questions in the meantime, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com. Or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. It's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.